Welcome to Generation Now, a show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. It seems like we're living in a world where we are all looking at screens online for our classes, and most of us have the same boring experience that's drab and, you know, uninspired. But my guest today has created an entire new world for his students at Lakeview Technology Academy through his innovative, almost Twitch-like approach to teaching. I am pleased to welcome him today. Please welcome Timothy Overocker, a teacher of computer science at Lakeview Technology Academy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me today.
So I just want to kind of take a step back and like, how did you come up with this idea? How did you get into teaching? Kind of just take us from the very beginning of how you thought you could meld these two worlds.
Well, we saw this coming all like last March, a year ago, when things were starting to shut down and teachers were running around trying to find out, how do I connect with my students? How do I teach? At that time, my students, I run an amateur radio club, and we were meeting every day over the airways, and we were talking about how other teachers were connecting with their students. Some were doing email, some were doing Google Classroom. And one of the kids said, "Mr. O, it'd be really neat if a teacher just would do it like a video game stream." And I was like, "We can do that. That's not too hard." And then all while summer was shut down, I worked together to put together the equipment needed to do that. We have multiple cameras, multiple monitors, getting a green screen, figuring out how to make all of that work. And day one, we started rolling together with it, and it made for seamless transition when whether we're in person or virtual. It just worked, and the kids seemed to be more engaged if they could just see me while I was teaching, you know, as if they had the ability to connect instead of just seeing a static picture of the classroom.
Very interesting. So how did you come to Lakeview? How are you from the Kenosha area? Kind of talk about your journey to Lakeview.
Sure.
Absolutely. And why that was the place where this could happen.
Long story short as possible, born and raised in Kenosha, graduated from Tremper in 98, graduated for the computer science degree from University of Wisconsin Parkside. After that, I went into industry. I worked as a senior data analyst for a clinical research company and found out very quickly that we weren't able to hire as many computer scientists as we needed. And after talking with the CEO and many other CEOs, they were like, "We just can't find the computer scientists that we need in the United States." And I said, "I can help fix that." And I started substitute teaching. We worked 4 days a week, and I substitute taught on Fridays. Substitute taught 1.5 days, and the principal called me up and said, "Do you want a full-time job?" And I switched right then and there from being in industry to being an educator, and have never looked back. This is an amazing career. I get to work with amazing people every single day, and I get to be part of the solution to generate more and more computer scientists that we desperately need. It's literally a national security issue that we don't have enough people that are skilled and knowledgeable in computer science. And that's how I'm here. And this is a great school that allows me to really just push the envelope with what my kids and I are working on.
So kind of for those who are listening who might not know kind of the mission of Lakeview, kind of talk about what separates it and what makes it different in the whole scheme of KUSD.
Lakeview is considered what's called a choice high school. We offer all of your standard classes, your math, your English, your science, your history, economics. And then in addition to that, we offer career pathways, biotechnology, information technology, computer science, engineering, and manufacturing. And students, when they come here, in addition to taking the normal core classes, they take courses that are specific to these career paths. And as they progress through these tracks, the courses get deeper and deeper into these niche areas.
Right. And so by the time they end up at the end of their degree program, they're ready to go to college or get advanced training.
Absolutely. We're always talking about career college ready, and students that graduate from Lakeview, our goal is having them graduate with marketable skills the day they walk out of here. They get a lot of certificates and training that are partnered with Gateway, and they come walking out of here with a lot of credits for a degree at Gateway, also a lot of AP credits to get them ready for a four-year degree program, or they come out with hireable certificates and can go right into the job force.
Have you seen that happen? Go right from high school to, wow.
Absolutely. We have many kids that when they're juniors and seniors that are already working in industry. Last year we had, during the shutdown, I got a phone call from one of my students, Mr. Overacker, I'm going to be a little late on this quiz because we're firing up the machines and we're making masks as fast as we can and get them shipped out. And so we've got kids that are on all levels of manufacturing. From engineering to metalwork, to welding and fabrication, to working in the hospital systems, they're across the board.
So I want to transition now to, of course, COVID. COVID-19 hits. And like you said earlier, you said like you had discussions early on. How did you come up with the format of having you on the screen, which is very comparable to what a lot of that generation, Generation Z watches, which is Twitch, right? The gaming platform. It's very similar to that kind of platform. So was that a decision that you made? Was it in consultation with students? How did you come up with that format?
With nothing better to do this summer than to sit there and scroll through social media, I found myself watching a bunch of people just sit there and play video games and watching how they were interacting with the people around them. And I was like, this would be great for a classroom. And talked to my fellow students and they're like, yeah, Mr. O, this is really good. First day of class, as soon as I was firing up my transitions between the different scenes, one of the students wasn't mic'd and said, oh my gosh, Mr. O's got transitions. This is just like Twitch. And it's a lot of fun. It's definitely a learning curve. And it's definitely a lot of busy work going on behind the scenes. One of the kids said, Mr. Overacker, it's like Wizard of Oz, you're the man behind the curtain. And the students that are in class, they're getting better at it now, but they have what's the online kids are seeing, they have it being projected up on a screen in front of them. And so the kids don't know whether they need to look at me or they look at my screen. And it takes them a while to work. I said, guys, doesn't matter. We're all in this together. Pick one and we'll go with it. And it's working. And it's different than what my peers are doing. Not everybody can run these type of skills. Teachers are working really hard right now. And some things just come easier to other people.
Right. And clearly, this is a method that the kids engage with when they're at home, right? Or like, this is something they're used to seeing, this kind of format. So could you talk about teaching in this format? You know, what are some of the subjects that you find easier to teach in this format? Of course, what you're teaching, computer science, is a lot different than maybe your traditional math or social studies or what have you. But talk about kind of how you adapted your material that you have to teach them in this new way.
Sure, absolutely. I teach computer science and physics. So all of the hands-on classes that were that deal with a lot of lab-based things, like the physics class, has moved to a lot more discussion-based and a lot more virtual labs, where it's the students are creating the experiments using digital tools and collaborating with their peers, where they might have partners both in the classroom and out of the classroom. If there's ever things they need to manipulate, a lot of times it's the in-class student that's manipulating that and sharing the experience with the student that is virtual. In your English classes, they're doing a lot more discussion, a lot more collaborative projects when it talks to how do we analyze this piece of literature. With my computer science classes, we were pretty much always on a screen anyways. And so what makes it difficult to be virtual is that when the students were in my classroom, we used to do team programming where I or another student would sit next to each other and we would share the keyboard and work together on the program. Virtual teaching makes that a lot harder. The ability, I can't just sit next to a kid and go, okay, let's try this again. Let's work through this one more time. Let's see what happens when we change this. And so the students have had to learn to accept a higher level of frustration. I, as a teacher, have had to learn to accept a higher level of frustration, but we work through it. And it takes more time, but we work through it.
That was going to be my next question, is the people who are virtual at home, because it's still a hybrid model for the district as a whole. Some kids have decided to come back into class. Some are still at home and they're still seeing the screen that looks like a Twitch stream up on the classroom through the projector screen. And then at home, they're watching it on their computer screens. How do you monitor and gauge how students are doing in those two worlds at the same time at home, right? And then also in the classroom.
It's a lot of learned behavior. So like the kids in the classroom, it's the same old skills of teaching. You're checking for eye contact, you're checking for engagement. Online, you're looking for, are the kids dropping chats in the chat box? Are they raising their hand? Are they asking questions? Are they sending emails? Okay, so it's really just, are they being engaged? And if I can get a kid to be engaged, then I can get any lesson I need through them. If they're responding back and forth, then it's just a slower process, but it still happens. The learning still goes on.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because I think a lot of parents too, right, would be potentially, maybe not at Lakeview, right? But I could see parents out there going, well, if my kid is just watching a Twitch stream, like how are they learning? So have you had to deal with parents who are like, I don't get this? And having the kids kind of say like, well, I'm getting it, right? Which is what matters, right? So how do you have those discussions with parents who might not get this?
We combated that early on. Our first parent-teacher conferences and our open houses this year, we instructed the kids to give their school devices to their parents. And the parents logged into the online classes and the teachers all ran mini lessons with the parents to show the parents how Google Classroom worked, how students can access information, how to contact the teacher, email, chat, text, all of that. So once we ran through that with most of the parents, it became pretty easy. We still have students that sometimes have trouble at home if they're in an area that have a dead zone with technology. So we work a lot with our IT people with KUSD to get hotspots to make sure the connection issues are being resolved. And then we run into trouble. I mean, everyone runs into trouble if the local internet provider goes down and a whole area of Kenosha is without internet for a couple hours. That becomes a challenge, but then it's nothing that we can't work through.
Right. And parents haven't said, well, I don't want my kid learning this way. How do I make sure that they're learning? By bringing them into that process early, did you mitigate a lot of that?
We mitigated a lot of that. And plus, parents always had the option that if they didn't feel their child was learning enough in the virtual sense, they could always move them back to in-person. And so if virtual wasn't working for a kid, whether the grades were slipping or things just wasn't working at home for them, there was always the option to bring them back into the building.
So this is going to be a weird question, but it's one that I'm curious about because I know that it was my experience when I was in school, or I wish it was. But do you find the students who are in the classroom, even because they're still looking at the same screen, right, of you on the projector, even though you are in the classroom, they can look at the screen. Do you find that they still chat message you instead of asking you questions directly? I wish I had that availability.
Absolutely.
In high school.
That's one of the best things about this entire thing is now students that would normally be quiet in the back of the classroom and not really respond, you'd really have to try and pull teeth to get an answer from. They'll open up their laptop, quickly jump into the virtual classroom, drop a quick chat message in the chat box or send me an email. I'm getting emails from students late at night asking about artificial intelligence, and they're just information's coming in at all times. And it's about teaching the kids when can we respond to these and how can we best get the information back to the kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wish I had that availability when I was going, even though I'm actually a quite personable person, I'm actually quite shy. People are actually shocked by that. I'm curious what some hiccups that you had when you were launching the system. You said it was a learning curve earlier. Could you talk about some of the hiccups that you had? I mean, of course, getting all of that equipment is a major investment on your part. So just talk about the early days of setting this up and any hiccups.
Sure, absolutely.
You might have had.
Getting the extra monitors wasn't a real issue. When KUSD went to one-to-one learning, we disassembled all of our computer labs, and it's because we needed more space to spread students out. So having the extra monitors, that was a quick, easy grab. Finding the adapters to go from a USB to the monitors wasn't that big of an issue. I've been running two monitors for years, and this year I'm up to four. And so it was just adding more and more peripherals to the system, getting some extra USB adapters, getting extra cameras. The school district's been really good this year about if teachers need equipment for helping them teach. Our principal's like, tell me what you need. I can get it for you. I asked right away, it's like, hey, can I get a green screen? And she's like, what size do you want? Let's get it in and make it work. And then it's just a matter of finding the software, finding a lot of open source software. I use OBS Studio, which is an open source broadcasting suite for digital video. And I was able to tie all of my cameras into that and tie it into Zoom or Google Meet with just a click of a button. And it's just a matter of, if you look at my setup, my main laptop screen, that's what I'm teaching from. That's what I'm interacting with. The screen immediately to my left is my control panel that has OBS. It's got all of my cameras, all of the different scenes that I use. And then my virtual kids are all on the third screen, all by themselves. So that way, if they have a question, I'm just looking my head straight over. It's not, let me quick change my screen to see if someone's dropping the chat. It's right there all the time. And then the fourth monitor is just a cloned monitor of what is up on the projector. So I'm always seeing what all my kids see at all times. And it's just a matter of, just like if you're in the control booth in the radio room, just throwing sliders to turn on this device, turn off that device. And it's a lot of juggling, but it gets done and it's pretty quick.
And how many hours a day, just to kind of put that in people's head, how many different cycles of classes do you have per day at Lakeview that you almost have to restart that process over and over again?
This year I'm teaching an overload, which means I teach every block of the day. A lot of teachers will have one period of the day where they're not teaching a class, where they get to spend time grading and getting set for the next classes. I teach every period of the day. So I teach block 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then 7 and 8. So I teach 6 or 7 different classes a day.
My goodness. My goodness. And then restarting all of that technology.
Yep.
So with the OBS software, which is like a video switching platform, which is what a lot of the Twitch streamers use because it's open source and free. Do you have multiple camera inputs?
Absolutely.
So that you can get the projector yep. screen and then your direct camera and you're switching live like a video director, on top
Absolutely.
Of your teaching.
I can switch live between any of my four monitors. I can choose to put myself in the image or take myself out of the image. And I also have a live document camera that I can jump over and start writing as if I'm writing on a board. And I'm in that frame too. So it's it works pretty slick. I know it's not going to work for radio, but I can jump over because you can see me. You know, you're going to see it right there as soon as this turns on. There's my live camera and I'm writing. And I can jump back, and now the kids can see it.
So for those of you, of course, you know, who are listening, what Mr. Overrocker did was he went to his document viewer, so I could see him as if he were writing notes or like a math formulation or what have you. He can cut to that camera, and so I saw him cut to that camera, and it seamlessly transitioned. And so, I mean, it's just a real marvel. So there was a study, and it was kind of going on Twitter too, that there's a lot of people, young people, like in your classroom, that kind of age group, Generation Z, who say that when they want to grow up, they want to be a gamer, they want to be an influencer, and maybe not your clientele specifically, right? You're the students you're working with, they want to be computer scientists. But how do you deal with students whose world is shaped by this technology, right? And making sure you know the lingo, making sure that you kind of are in their world, in a world that they, most of them, a lot of the generation wants to be influencers, be gamers.
The best answer to that is I tell my students, when given a choice of technology and media, you can either be programmed by it or you can program it. And so we talk about like, what is the purpose of social media? And they say it's to meet with friends. And I was like, no, it's to monetize human interaction. It's to gather data about the human experience and then use that data to drive industry. And when we teach students how to be masters of their own data, how to program the world around them, how to create, then they can go and program whatever system they're in. So whether it be in finance, or if they want to be a professional video game player or a game designer, it all starts with can you program the world around you? Can you control the systems around you? Computer science is really misnomered. It should be more called computational science or computational thinking, where we use a computer as a tool to control systems, whether it be systems of people, systems of industry. And once kids start thinking in that mindset that they can really be a computer scientist and be in any industry in the world, it really opens up their minds.
That is such an interesting way of looking at it, especially as we see the rise, as you mentioned earlier, of artificial intelligence, and the people programming AI for the future are arguably the most important people in the next 30 to 50 years. And we're seeing that now with some of the early implementations in police apparatuses where they're scanning people's faces and things of that nature. The equitable side of AI is huge. So you're having those discussions in class about creating this future.
We were talking about that just yesterday. And the big thing that we're trying to talk to the kids about is that you have to be observant of the biases that exist in data, and that we want to generate diverse teams of programmers so that everybody on the team can work together to cover each other's blind spots. Because the more inputs that we get from people, the more experiences that people have, the better a programmer I can be, the better a programmer everyone else can be, and the better we can reach the whole entire community. We talk a lot about a digital divide, about the people that have access to digital equipment versus those that don't have access to digital equipment. We were just programming AIs 2 days ago in two different my classes. One was programming an AI to detect garbage versus fish. And another class, we're doing a deep learning AI about how to play the mastermind game. It's a code breaking AI. And these kids are writing these AIs from scratch. We're bringing some really high level computational skills down to a reachable level that freshmen, juniors, sophomores, seniors can all access and start to wrap their head around.
That is just absolutely incredible. I'm blown away by that. So we're about a year into the pandemic. We're starting to see a slight uptick. That's not good, not necessarily here, but in places across the country. What do you wish you knew then that you know now about this setup and how you're interacting with your students?
I wish I would have done it sooner. Honestly, the ability to put myself in the screen and show my kids how the code works. For years, I've been teaching coding where my desk was on one side of the classroom and the kids' desks were scattered around, and they could only see what was on the screen. And I was stuck behind my keyboard typing code. Now I'm stuck behind my keyboard typing code, but if I look up on my computer screen, it's like I'm looking out to them and they can see me through that way. So when I get excited, I can change my facial expressions. I can show that I'm excited. I can point to things that are on my screen, and I can actually point on my screen. And I wish I would have done this years ago. But it's just technology keeps going every year. And even next year, if we're all back in person, the green screen is going to stick around. And the ability to put myself into my lectures is going to be very, very beneficial.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question was, do you think that a lot of this is going to stick around? Are there going to be things that you take out that you implement differently if we're back in the classrooms by the fall?
Everyone hopes that school is back to normal in the fall, and we'll see what it is. I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know what's going to be happening next year. All I know is that whatever kids I have in front of me, whether they be in the classroom or virtual, I'm going to reach out to them the best that I can, and they're going to reach out to me the best that they can. And teachers, once we learn new skills, those skills don't generally go away. So I have a very strong feeling that there'll be some sort of virtual option. I don't know how it's going to be implemented, but we have the eSchool. Kenosha Unified has always had the eSchool for the last couple of years. And I'm going to probably see that increase more. And so we'll see how it goes. We don't know exactly. I do know that they're working on the plans for it, though.
Yeah. And see, that's interesting, because I know for me, as I said earlier, like I would have done, I think, so much better if there was a virtual option or some sort of hybrid model going forward, or when I was in school. Do you think that going forward that there are going to be some kids who perform better in that model? Have you seen that some kids are better when they're virtual?
There's that old saying that if you don't learn the way I teach, let me teach the way you learn. And Saying that some students perform better virtually is absolutely true. There are some students that perform better in person. There are some students that perform better in large settings versus small settings. And so the trick for any educator is to find what setting works best for each of your kids. And one of the big takeaways from the pandemic this year was to learn that in large decisions, like whether the school is virtual or in person, not one choice works for everybody. Okay, so when KUSD was all virtual, there were a lot of kids struggling. If KUSD went to all in person, there'd be a lot of kids that were, and parents that would be very scared whether or not to be in person or not. I mean, vaccines are increasing now. The level of infection is going down, coming up, going down, but it looks like things are all moving in the right direction. And there's a bunch of kids that are coming back next week or 2 weeks when fourth quarter starts up. And you know, however I see my kids, whether they're in person or virtual, we'll do the best we can to reach them.
We have a few more minutes here on today's program, Generation Now. I'm here with Timothy Overrocker. What do you want your students to remember about this time? We spend so much time thinking about, you know, how, you know, adults, you know, were affected. What do you want your students to remember?
I want them to remember the same things I tell my kids. I want them to know that they are loved, that they are blessed, and that I'm proud of them. They are living in a time that we have no understanding of. We are building the ship while we're flying it. Okay, we are learning to tap dance and put out fires and be nurses and doctors all at the same time. And so I need my kids to know that they are loved, they are blessed, and I am proud of them for everything that they have been going through and everything they've accomplished.
And final question here. That was amazing. What do you think your students have learned about you?
That is a great question. My students have learned about me that I love what I do, that throw a challenge at me, but find me a way to get in contact with my students. And if my students can reach out that contact and grab onto it, then we'll create a little spark and we'll fan that spark until we get a flame. And then once that flame is there and it catches, I step back and watch it burn. Because these kids, they're going places. These kids are asking all the right questions. They are working with each other. They're being collaborative. And it always, always amazes me as to the work that students all over KUSD do. And it's not just at Lakeview. When I talk to other schools and other teachers, there's a lot of kids and teachers that are doing some amazing things right now. And I can't wait to just stand back and watch them go.
Thank you so much for being here. I truly appreciate it. Timothy Overrocker is a teacher of computer science and physics at Lakeview Technology Academy. Until next time, bye everybody.